This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue-collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue-collar workers for blue-collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
The world moves fast. Your workday, even faster. Pitching products, drafting reports, analyzing data. Microsoft 365 Copilot is your AI assistant for work. Built into Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and other Microsoft 365 apps you use, helping you quickly write, analyze, create, and summarize, so you can cut through clutter and clear a path to your best work. Learn more at Microsoft.com/M365Copilot.
You're listening to the Pennsylvania Woodsman, powered by Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network.
This show is driven to provide relatable hunting and outdoor content in the Keystone State and surrounding Northeast.
On this show, you'll hear an array of perspectives from biologists and industry professionals
to average Joes with a lifetime of knowledge.
All centered around values aiming to be better outdoorsmen and women,
both in the field as well as home and daily life.
No clicks, no self-interest, just delight in the pursuit of creation.
And now, your host,
the pride of Pennsylvania,
the man who shoots straight and won't steer you wrong,
Johnny Appleseed himself,
Mitchell Shirk.
Mitchell Shirk.
Mitchell Shirk.
Mitchell Shirk.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Pennsylvania Woodsman Podcast. I'm thankful to be here and up and upright and breathing and fairly healthy. I'm trying to fight off another sickness that's one of my children brought in. And, the other thing my children do a great job of is making sure we don't get good sound sleep throughout the night and having to come in and wake us up in the middle of the night. But, hey, that's par for the course, and that's the way it goes. I'm really thankful to be able to say I got some wonderful children, wonderful family, and it's been a good spring so far. So let's hope we can keep that rolling into turkey season. I've been having some scheduling issues here lately with some of our guests. Some of the episodes and the content we wanted to bring out here, and with that lull, that means this week I have a little episode I put together here, and we're going to talk about, and I call it hunting slower this spring, and there's a couple things behind it that I'm going to approach, but really I want to go through some of my turkey hunting experiences and share with you some of the mistakes I've made that stick out in my mind, how I've learned from them, and hopefully it'll be something that you guys can appreciate and maybe learn something from, use this season. So we're going to dive into this episode. There's a couple things that I want to talk about here before we do. The first one, for those of you who did not hear on last week's episode, if you were not with us, a couple weeks ago, on April 9th, I got the news from my buddy Clayton that one of the fellows that he brought with us to our bear camp this year, a good friend of his named Evan Geiswhite. Evan, this still gets me going, so bear with me. Evan lost his life in an accident on the highway April 9th. Evan was driving the vehicle with his wife in the car, and unfortunately the accident was very ugly, and Evan lost his life. And behind him, he left his wife, who was 20 weeks pregnant, and she unfortunately had to have a surgery to save her own life and save herself. And unfortunately, they lost their 20-week-old baby. He also left behind his 3-year-old son, who fortunately was not in the car with this accident. But there's a ton of uncertainty, as you can expect with somebody who was young, I'm talking their late 20s, that did not have anything like an event like this in their life planned for. This is a shock. This is devastating. And there's a lot of unknowns to come. Excuse me. And there's two things I want to share. Number one, please keep Evan, his wife Amanda, his son, his family and loved ones, please keep them in your prayers, because prayer is probably the most strong thing that can happen right now. And the second thing that I want to share is, if you feel so compelled that you would like to support Evan's family during this time, you have two options in which you can do this. Number one is the classic GoFundMe, and this is in memory of Evan Geiswhite. And Geiswhite is spelled GeiseWhite. So you can go there and give. Now, there's a note here that says donations may also be sent directly to Big Woods Bible Church, bigwoods.org. is the website, bigwoods.org. Under the Giving tab, select Other, and in the description, write Geiswhite. Again, that's GeiseWhite. And when you give through the Big Woods Bible Church, it avoids the 2.9% fee of donations through GoFundMe. So I'm going to share that here for the next few weeks, because I would love the opportunity to support Amanda and the family as much as we can. Because there's a lot of grieving, there's a lot of sorrow, and there's a lot of question of why would something like this happen? And right now, I think being supported is the best thing we can do. So, all right, we're going to get into the turkey episode. I hate to go from one extreme to the next in my talking here. I come from talking about something very serious and very heavy to going to a commercial break here and talking about products and companies and stuff. But the fact of the matter is, these are all companies that have great values, great support, and they support this show, and I'm thankful to have them. So we're going to talk about them, and that first one would be Radix Hunting. Radix Hunting is the king of blinds, the Monarch Blind series. The pop-up Monarch blind, in my opinion, is one of the nicest blinds that I've ever been able to use from ones I've owned and ones I've borrowed in the past. Also, check out trail cameras. Any of their gear, from the M-Core cell cameras to Gen 700s, stick and pick camera accessories, tree stands, you name it, go to radixhunting.com. And you can check out all the things that they have to offer that are made in quality. Attention archers, would you like to be part of the world's oldest gathering of bow hunters? Then mark your calendars for the annual Pennsylvania Bow Hunters Festival. This annual three-day event is held at the Sullivan County Fairgrounds in Forksville, Pennsylvania, which has been going on since 1957. It's a family-friendly event allowing participants to engage in 10 different archery shooting areas, including 3D, moving small game targets, a timed clay pigeon shoot, a steel boar, and the renowned Forksville running deer target. There's also a ton of food, fellowship, and entertainment to be made. The 2025 festival is scheduled for September 19th to the 21st, with daily hours running 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. This event is organized by a nonprofit committee, and all proceeds support local needs, including youth groups, volunteer fire and ambulance companies, and more. Visit their website at www.pabowhunters.com for more information, and we hope to see you there this year. So I said I want to slow down this spring when it comes to turkey hunting, and there's a lot to unpack with that, and I'm not gonna harp on it too long, but I'm gonna talk about a couple things. And what I mean by slow down this spring, the thing that stands out to me is an experience I had years ago when I was taking younger kids hunting. I would have been, you know, in that 17, 18, 19-year-old range, and I had friends and family who were younger than me that were junior hunters. And I would take them during that junior hunt and, you know, try to call a turkey in for them. And keep in mind that most of my turkey hunting experiences when I was young, I hunted a place where the majority of the ways we turkey hunted was we would sit on it in an opening, mostly a food plot, and we would sit in a blind, and we would very often sit from first light until noon, and we would just sit there and be patient. And as a young kid, there were so many times where I'm like, this is stupid. I don't like hunting this way. This is boring. I want to go move around. I want to hunt turkeys the way I see other people hunt turkeys, and run and gun style. And I'll never forget when I was taking people turkey hunting in that junior hunt. There's one hunt that sticks out in particular. I took my younger cousin, who, at the time, I'm going to say he was probably 13, 14 years old, and I got the brilliant idea when we were going up to our cabin that we were going to take this long walk up this road all the way up to a switchback, and we were going to run the switchback out to this big point on top, and we were going to find turkeys on top, and, you know, we had the best hearing vantage, and it wasn't necessarily a bad idea, but we did that, and we hoofed it from dark until it was getting light and worked our way out to this point. We're standing on this point, I'm going to say somewhere in that 7 o'clock ballpark. And guess where the bird gobbles? Down over in the bottom where we just came from, across the ridge, across the hollow, and on the other side. So I looked at him. I said, what do you want to do? He goes, let's go. So straight down over the mountain we went, just where we came from. And we cross the hollow, and there's a large bench on the bottom edge of that other side. We get up there, we set up, and we're calling, and we couldn't get a bird to answer us. But as luck would have it, as we were sitting there, one gobbled where we just came from. Now, it wasn't on the top, but it was back across the hollow we just crossed, and there was another semi flat bench on that same level toward the bottom, but a bird gobbled on that side, a different bird, and it was unmistakably a different bird, and there's a reason I know it's a different bird. So we sat there for a while, no responses on that side, and said, well, what do you want to do? Should we go back over where we started? Yeah, let's go. Back down the ditch, up the other side to that bench, got set up, started working the turkey, nothing. But it didn't take long, another 20 minutes, half hour, and a turkey gobbled back where we just were, across the ditch, on that bench. In fact, two of them answered. So, a sensible thing would have been to just stay put and just try to call one of these turkeys in because they're mobile. But, again, I was going back to, I hate that sitting. I do that at the main place I hunt. We're going to move. So, what did we do? Back down, across, and onto that bench. And that time, I remember when we crested the edge of the bench to get set up, I heard stuff running in the leaves. And there again, another situation where I was not careful and not really concerned about the open hardwoods and how I needed to maneuver through. And I ended up, they saw us and chased us. And we never saw them, but I heard them run off. And I kid you not, we didn't even sit down over there. We were standing over there after that happened, and the bird gobbled back where we just crossed. So we literally crossed this ditch one, two, three, four times, back and forth, and got back over. Now, we ended the morning sitting at that spot on the bottom half, and I ended up calling a hen into shotgun range into a small opening, and the gobbler hung up on the hill. I didn't see the gobbler. My cousin saw the gobbler, probably 70-ish yards in the timber, fanned out, but he stayed up above us, the hen came down, worked her way through, circled back around, went up to the gobbler, and away they went, and that was it. It was an exciting morning, but I didn't realize how much I learned from that hunt until it got to be older in life and other people who were better turkey hunters than me started to share some of their experiences and thoughts. And the reason I told my hunting experiences on this other property earlier is because I have learned now that even though most turkey hunters are going to poo-poo the idea of sitting all morning and just sitting in one spot, and they don't like that, or they don't like sitting in blinds and stuff, and that's all well and good, but I realize how much I learned by doing that all those years. First of all, I learned patience for turkey hunting, to be in a situation where the people that were kind of telling us where we're going to hunt and where we go, and saying, sit here till noon, you have a good chance. I didn't realize how much I would learn in terms of patience and seeing and hearing turkeys maneuver throughout an area that they frequent, how they use that area. I learned a ton doing that over the years and realize this now. Hunting slow and slowing down, meaning don't be just constantly on the move and running, because it is so easy to want to just go after the gobbling turkey. Where up, there's one goblin, let's run him down, let's call like crazy, let's get him fired up, it's exciting for him to answer me, and hopefully he just comes running down the gun barrel. Hey, I agree, that is fun, and if you had to write a textbook turkey hunt, that is probably what most of us would write. I've had those experiences, and man, it's a blast. But the reality of it is the amount of times that has happened in my turkey hunting experiences, and I think the amount of times it's happened for a lot of other turkey hunters, it's very, very minimal. So I've kind of changed my approach in slowing down, and I try to, first of all, the places that I hunt now with the amount of time that I have, I try to really approach the property as if I was deer hunting it, minus the wind. Obviously, I'm not worried about the wind for turkeys, but I do look at a property, and I did this a couple places in the off season. First of all, I want to get myself familiarized. I want to know where are there barriers that turkeys are going to get hung up on? Where are their places that they may roost? Where are their places that they may come out to feed, strut? Where's a creek that might change the way I approach? And then where are places that I can get into to hunt and I'm hopefully not going to be seen walking in while the turkeys are on the roost. Hopefully I can maneuver if they're on the ground. If I hear a turkey, I can move into a spot and I don't have to worry about him seeing me from a long distance with their excellent eyesight. And really, I'm looking how I can sneak in and out. And I'm not looking to just barge into the middle of the property most of the time. And I think it comes back to the fact that I hunt Pennsylvania. I'm hunting some of these properties repeatedly. And the more I blow it up with loud, obnoxious calling and chase turkeys, the more I think they become educated. And they're going to get hunting pressure. And I've learned that you can kill a turkey a few days later if you're patient with him and you don't bust it up and mess it up in the first place. I think what your timeline you're hunting is very important. If I like, let's just go with last year. Last year I took a 3-day trip down to Maryland and hunted in Western Maryland. And in that case, I threw some of the hunting slow out the window. I had 3 days to hunt. First of all, I had to find turkeys. The first day we found turkeys and they were way off. We didn't have anything close whatsoever. So I did a lot of maneuvering trying to find, just to find a turkey. I was unfamiliar with the place. And I think that's a case that you could say that's a little bit different. Day two, we found turkeys, worked our way in, and, you know, we had a good hunt. But my point is, I did a lot of where's a turkey, run him down, try to make a setup on him, and call. And I did that because it was a boom bust situation. I wasn't coming back. I was not going to be. I was either going to kill one or I was going to scare the daylights out of one because of that timeline. But as we go into spring gobbler and I'm looking at this route, and I've told this before, I have a turkey hunting route that I do on a 2-week schedule because I have a 2-week work schedule where I go to certain places on that specific day, and I really like to try to hunt as much as I can before I go to work, you know, maybe an hour or two before I go and get busy at work here. So with me being able to hunt on a schedule, on a routine basis, what I don't want to do is go in opening week and dive right into the middle of the property and potentially, you know, high risk, high reward hunt. I just don't hunt like that. There's a lot of people that will. There's a lot of people that are successful. That's not me. I've failed more. And I think it's because I don't think I'm as good of a hunter as other people in some cases. And I'm just not as risky of a hunter. I'm trying not to be the older that I come. So I have a timeline. I have a 5-week season in which I can hunt these birds and I can keep tabs on them. And what I try to do before the season is listen where they're roosting, listen to where they fly down, where is their scratchings, where is all this. And I'm just going to slip in at the edge on some of these properties, and most of the time I'm just making soft calls. And the reason for that is I can count on very few times in my life where I've heard hens just absolutely go crazy. I mean, maybe it's more than I realize, but you know, the loud, raspy yelps, the heavy cutting and cackling, especially if you take off the roost. You know, I think it's more common. You'll hear some fly down cackles and some interesting loud tree yelps in the morning. I've heard that, but fly downs in the morning and throughout the mornings, it's usually softer calling. It's those, you know, couple note yelps, soft yelps, clucks, purrs, things like that. Of course, I have heard hens get aggressive, but it's not as frequent, it's not as common. And I think as much fun as it is to show off your calling skills and go nuts, for me, I have called in more turkeys with soft calling. And I think one that stands out to me the most is, you know, I told that story of that bird. I took my cousin on and we didn't get at my cabin. But the next year, I took him to a small property. And I think the size of the property really dictated the way I hunted it. And I hunted it kind of similar to the way I described it already in this episode, but it wasn't because I was that smart. It was because I was kind of forced to by the size of the property. But what I learned when we had a bird that was hung up with some hens on another property, I was smart enough and waited until it got to be later in the morning when things were hopefully, you know, bird was hopefully going to break off of them hens. And we slipped in a little bit closer and used some soft calling. And my approach with the soft calling was to try to, first of all, if he's still with the hens, call the hens in. Call them in with some feeding calls, some clucks, soft yelps and purrs, scratching in the leaves. And knowing that if I went in there with as a real loud, aggressive hen, more times than not, when I have done that in my life and there's a hen with a gobbler, she takes the gobbler away from me. I've had that happen more than anything. But I've called in a lot more hens by just regular turkey communication. And that it was kind of neat to see the hen come in through the thick stuff. And I heard the turkey gobble one extra time on his own at a crow, and when the last time I heard him gobble, he was extremely close, and sure enough, he followed suit behind the hen. Boom, my cousin killed this big gobbler, had like a 10.5-inch beard, and you know, real nice spurs, and that was an awesome turkey hunting experience. But as time went on, little nuances like that made me realize the soft calling, the sitting tight, the being patient, being in a place where turkeys want to be. They just have a route. I think it's so easy, like I do this all the time, where places that I can hunt that I drive past and I see birds out in the field and you think, well, they're here all the time. They got to be here. I got to make it happen. I'm just going to get here and make it happen. I mean, I know I am bad that I just want it now. And I think that's so normal that we just want it now. We got to make it happen now. And more times than not, it's not going to happen now. It's going to be a drawn-out process. And I think helping to listen to what the birds are doing, reading the terrain, that's another big one. Hunting at camp the first few years, it was hearing a bird on the mountain. The bird is that direction. I'm going to head that direction. And then along the way, if I see something that makes sense to set up on, excuse me, and I get into a certain bubble that I think is comfortable that I could call the turkey in distance-wise, that's where I'm going to set up. More times than not, that has not worked for me. And I've learned later that there was some kind of obstacle, a terrain obstacle, a vegetation obstacle, a water, something that just didn't align. So there comes a side of my woodsmanship in knowing that property. Now, we're always going to hunt places that maybe we don't have as much familiarity with, but with the technology we have with maps, it's amazing how you can hear a bird gobble today, pull up your maps on your phone, and look at the terrain and say, well, I think the bird is over on this side hill on this bench. And it sounds like he is working his way from his left to his right. And I, looking at this map, it looks like that bench kind of wraps out and goes a few hundred yards out here. Oh, let me just measure it. I'll measure it to this point. If he's heading that direction, I might be able to make a big loop around and use the terrain to my advantage, get on the opposite side of that bench that he's heading in that direction. Maybe I have a better chance just looking at that terrain and seeing. And I tell you what, that has helped me move on turkeys quite a bunch. It doesn't always work, but what an advantage to use it that way rather than getting excited, running and down, and calling loud and aggressive for this turkey. I think one of the advantages or disadvantages, I talked about that earlier, is calling the hens away from me when they're henned up. All right, everyone, it's that time of year where things are greening up and I'm starting to think about food plots. And if you're doing the same thing, look no farther than Vitalize Seed, specifically Nitro Boost spring and summer planting. It's the food plot that has the ability to fix atmospheric nitrogen and add diversity to your food plot mix. It's highly browse tolerant and adds a ton of benefit, not just to the wildlife, but for your soil. 30% more diversity than any other food plot you're going to find, and it's engineered for the proper carbon to nitrogen ratio to naturally feed your soil biology and set you up for a fall food plot like no other. Diversity is king for your wildlife and for your soil. Look no farther and check out Vitalize Seed.
Listen, landowners, let Stephen Chilcote, Land and Timber Consultant, turn your land into a deer and wildlife magnet. With over 25 years of land and timber management experience, Steve's approach optimizes food and cover to attract deer and increase hunting success for his clients. Visit us online at chilcoteforester.com or call Steve today at 814-360-4510 to make sure your land is the ultimate hunting paradise.
When I talk to a turkey, if I call to him and he gobbles and he's quiet and I go quiet, more times than not, I think he's coming. But if he gobbles again and he's in the same spot, either one of two things is happening. He's either got to a spot in my mind where he wants, like he's at a top, he's at a lek strut zone that he doesn't want to leave. He wants the hens to come. And sometimes they'll get to those points and they don't want to budge. But I always think, more times than not, when they're not moving, they probably have what they need. They probably have hens, but he's gobbling. He's answering you to keep tabs on you. And I've tried the aggressive calling, and you know, you hear people talking about, you got to mimic the hen, you got to call to her. And sometimes that works. Sometimes you can call the hen from a distance, call her right into your lap and come in. I have done that, but more times than not, when the hen is with the gobbler and I start doing that, she usually has just taken the gobbler away from me. It's usually been better if the hen and the gobbler was separated. It seems I've been able to call the hen kind of towards me, and the two of us talking has allowed the gobbler to come in, and even then, that doesn't happen that frequently for me. But moral of my story with going back to my turkey hunting route and hunting slow is, if I go into a setup and I do my soft calls and a bird doesn't come in, let's just say he flies down and he shuts up. And a lot of time he does that, he flew down with some hens, or he's out there strutting and gobbling around, or he just flew down to the other end of the property. And rather than just running through the middle of the property to make another setup on him, potentially showing myself and exposing myself in a certain part of the property and maybe chasing turkeys, rather than do that and knowing that I only have so much time to hunt this morning, rather than hunting slow and working around, I can only hunt another 45 minutes. I have learned I'm better off just keeping tabs on what that gobbler does that morning. And I'm going to come back in a couple days. And if I'm able to come back in a couple days, I might change the setup I had. If he's roosted in a similar spot, I'm probably going to go over and see where he flew down at some point and make a setup over there. Maybe change the call I used instead of using one of my mouth calls. Maybe I go to my box call or slate call. Maybe I add some realism in scratching in the leaves, do a fly down cackle, use my hat and smack it against my leg for fly down. Just change things up, but subtleties that make your turkey hunting a little bit more real. Sitting on turkeys, I just think I've learned more about them. And it's amazing how many times, too, where birds have been receptive in the morning as far as responsive, but they don't come into that spot, but they keep tabs on where you're at. And I have had more than one occasion in my life turkey hunting and sitting on a spot where birds work their way away from me the first part of the morning, that's 6 to 7:30 time frame, but then by 9, 10, 11 o'clock, all of a sudden you hear a bird from that direction gobble on his own, and you make one call to him and he hammers right away, and then in no time flat he cuts the distance in half and he's coming towards you. And I swear they just keep tabs on you all the time with that. I've been saying a lot about calling aggressive, and I try not to call too aggressive all the time. I have, don't get me wrong. There's times to do that, and that's really, really hard to explain when is a good time, when is not for me. I kind of gauge it by feel is the best way. But I tell you what, one call that I learned the past few years that I think has just added more realism and I think has helped break some turkeys and have them come in is doing a whine or doing feeding calls, wheel, wheel. I have heard hens do this. You hear pet turkeys do this. Like, you ever go to a petting zoo with the kids and you hear turkeys under their breath making this little wheel and all these whimpers and all these different high-pitched sounds. They're soft. They're under your breath. But I've included those into calling sequences. And I'm going to do one real quick if I can, if this reed isn't stuck together. Just kind of goes like this. I'm not doing it real well right now just because this reed isn't broken. And I'm, of course, under pressure of a mic. But just stuff like that. But I don't typically get gobblers fired up on that, but I'm amazed at how many turkeys the past 2-3 seasons that I've done that to and came looking or responded in some way, shape, or form. And I have just as much success with 3-note yelps and stuff like that. And I'm beating a dead horse at this point, and you guys can understand, but There's one more thing that I kind of wanted to touch on when it comes to hunting slow. And it comes down to the fact that when we are in a situation in our life where we want it now, it's got to happen now, I want it, it's all my time, and you try to rush things, it creates a lot of stress, makes things not so very fun when we do that at times. And I think being in the woods, and I've said this before, being in creation is a fantastic way to have a little bit of a therapy session, relaxing session, some solitude, and a little bit closer connection with the Creator. You know, this past week was Easter, and I saw a joke thing the other day about, Christ died on the cross for us and paid our debt and our sins in his death, in the gruesome death that he did. And Christians today are hunting Easter eggs. And I kind of chuckled at that because there's definitely some truth to that. There's definitely some ugliness in the way our culture has interpreted and allowed things to just be dumbed down from the harsh reality of who God is and what he's done for us. And I really believe being present in the woods is a fantastic time because it's usually a place where you're able to be quiet. You're able to tune out the extremities of life that make that get loud, that are bothersome, and things like that. You're able to tune it out and be still. Be still and know that I am God. What's in the Psalms. And there is a lot of value to that. So I think I could make the argument that running around like a chicken with your head cut off after a gobbling turkey and not slowing down is also not healthy for the soul in some cases. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm going to do it. You're going to do it. A lot of us are going to do it at some point in the season. But there's nothing wrong with some mornings with sitting still and listening to turkeys and learning from turkeys and seeing what they're doing and sitting there and formulating a game plan of how maybe you can get on one later in the morning rather than diving in and possibly barging in there and messing it up. There's also nothing wrong when you're doing that to be sitting there in the awe of creation and being thankful and telling the Creator how thankful you are to be in this situation. And I'm talking about this because I had an experience happen that I think is worth sharing. I believe being in the woods, the solitude, serenity, that is all peaceful, that is all important. But I also think we can twist that. In some cases, I have heard a lot of people say that that is my church. You know, there's a lot of you guys out there that are big tough guys that have no interest in. It's, we'll use the cliche when we're deer hunting in a tree stand, that we're 18 feet closer to God. And I've seen God in places that you'll never see in a church. And there's definitely some truth to that. And I think what a lot of people like to get at is the fact that I don't like church. You know, they'll say I don't like church. Church is in the woods for me, and I don't like what church is in that sense. And a lot of time, I think what people are referring to is the over-programmed, like the institutionalized religion, that feel of, you know, it's brought in, our culture has affected it, it's this building, there's a formality, and it like you question the authenticity of that, it almost like an over-programmed sense. And hey, I sympathize with that, because the fact of the matter is we're a group of people that you cannot point amongst us who has lived a perfect, sinless life. There's been one person on this earth that has done that, and that's Jesus Christ, and you and I are not him. And if that is your thought behind church, I can get that. But reject that. But the thing that I can't hide is the fact that church is a place for accountability, gathering together, worship, and people are supposed to be strong in fellowship. We're not meant to be isolated, and fellowship and rejoicing and worshiping the Lord is something that is done stronger, and it's a place to learn, and it's a place to grow through, and have people to support you during hard times, and cherish. It's if you're looking for that comfortable padded pew to sit in with all the formalities and all your expectations, like, yeah, I get rejecting that. But if you reject church just because you don't like the idea of the congregation and that uncomfortableness you might get with people, guys, we're rejecting parts of the body of Christ that are necessary for our spiritual growth. I really think I question all of our hearts and really reevaluate and assess that ideology, because it says in the New Testament numerous times that God prepared the church, Jesus' bride. He prepared Jesus for his bride, the church. And basically that he was giving himself up to the church as a place of honoring worship, and that he would build the church back up. And the church was not built back up in the sense of the cathedral, the tabernacle, the temple. It was built up on the foundation of knowledge and worshiping our Creator, the one true God, through Jesus Christ. And a church can be anywhere. It doesn't have to be a building. It doesn't have to be any of those physical locations. A church is the gathering and the worship of our Creator, and we are strong in numbers. How many people want to fight a war with one soldier? It's just not the case. We are stronger in numbers. We are Christian soldiers. So those of you who believe in Christ, believe in the Creator, and call yourselves Christians, but you reject that institution, I really encourage you to make sure that you are not using your gift, your passion of hunting in the woods, and using that against the reason to go to church. You know, in Pennsylvania, we don't have the ability to turkey hunt on Sundays, but we've got states that neighbor us that do. And even if you're not turkey hunting, so to speak, there's nothing that keeps most people from going out and listening on a Sunday morning and scouting. And I say there's nothing wrong with that. But I would encourage you that when it's time for a church service to come in, that you find your way there. And there's so much power in that. I could probably talk a lot more about that, but I'm not a biblical scholar. I'm just sharing you with you what's on my heart and what's been in conversation with people in my life here in recent times. And I can relate because I've been in those situations. As I'm an avid hunter, I've felt the uncomfortableness of going to church, being forced to talk and congregate, and it's uncomfortable, and you question it's unnecessary. And I feel that pull to the woods. And it's very, very easy when you're on your own to feel that pull to the woods and do it on your own merit and not do it on the Lord's merit. And that has been where I've found myself time and time again. And I think I'm here to say, look, Christ loves you and he wants you to be successful in the turkey woods, believe it or not. But I also believe he wants you to grow closer. And there's different ways that he's going to reveal himself to you. But the one thing you definitely have to do when you want the Lord to reveal himself is you have to listen. You know, I started in the beginning of this episode, I was talking about Evan, and you know, I said the question, you know, why do bad things happen to good people like that? And my response is typically, who is leaving the standard for what is good? Because the fact of the matter is, the things that are good in this life, that we claim are good, and people that are good, that is done at an earthly standard. That is by our own human standards. The fact of the matter, from my point of view, Evan was a good man. Evan's family, are good people. And the fact that something so tragic would happen doesn't make sense to good people. But I said before, and I'll say again, when you go by what Christ has done for us, and you go by the sense of good and evil, who here has walked blameless in the eyes of the Lord? Aside from Christ, no one. We are all sinners. We are all bad. We all deserve that. Now, is that me saying that the tragedy that struck, that he was deserving of that? Not at all. That's not what I'm saying. But what I am saying is Christ paid the penalty for us to have eternity with him. There's different deaths out there. There's physical death, where we lose ourselves from the body. There's spiritual death, when we lose ourselves in the sin that we do. A perfect example of that is Adam and Eve when they were in the garden and ate from the tree of knowledge that they were instructed not to eat. They died right then and there. Now, their physical bodies didn't die. They remained living in the physical sense, but they had a spiritual death and a disconnect from God. The last death is eternal. And we have the option to accept Christ and move on and have a relationship eternally with our Creator. And the glory or the positive in this is I'm confident, and many other people are confident, of Evan's eternity, that it's in the promised land. And that's semi-comforting here. It still doesn't make this any easier. But the fact of the matter is, we're always going to be faced with tough challenges in our life. And whatever that is, from death to loss of relationships to changes in jobs, financial stresses, whatever that is, going turkey hunting and being in the woods and being creation is a great way to connect and be closer to God and be still and be quiet. But going hunting is also not the answer to avoid problems. Being connected in fellowship and being strengthened in numbers and being lifted up and worshiping our Creator, there's value in that. You can do it through both ways. Use your time in creation to strengthen your bond with Christ, but don't let it overshadow what he asks of you and asks of us as believers. Now, if you're listening to this whole episode and listening to me ramble and you don't believe, I've told this before and I'll say it again. If you have questions about Christ, if you have questions about who Jesus Christ is and what that means in eternal, what I'm talking about, what does any of this mean in eternal life and stuff, I encourage you to reach out to me. You can message me on social media, Pennsylvania Woodsman Podcast on Instagram and Facebook. You can message me, and I would be glad to talk to you. You can also email me, pawoodsmanpodcast@gmail.com. There's a couple different ways you can reach out, and there's a lot of other people besides me who would be willing to talk about this. If you're on the fence, if you're skeptical, or you just don't understand, it's the best decision I ever made in my life. And the reason that I talk about it on this podcast is because I want you guys to know the love and the wonderful things that have happened in my life. My life hasn't been easier, but the blessings in which I have had in my life are unfathomable. And I hope that you guys can experience that as well. And I share all this because I think turkey hunting is a great time to reevaluate, reassess, because of the way we hunt, the way we do spend some time in the woods. I think it's just the perfect storm. And I think with some of the stuff that has happened here recently that I wanted to share with you guys, I just think it was all fitting. And especially, you know, normally I like to have an episode that is a little more catered towards the Easter season. I normally do that the week leading in, and I didn't do that last week. I wanted to kind of circle back and really, really give thanks and go from there. So I'm going to end this episode. Thank you guys for listening if you made it this far. If you made it this far, I'd like to pray with you. Gracious Father, I thank you for this podcast. Thank you for the ability to connect with people and talk with them in hunting and creation. I thank you for the listeners. I thank you for the people who tune in on a occasional basis or a weekly basis, and they want to learn, be entertained, and gain something for their outdoor experiences. And I know, Lord, because I do it myself, that I do it sometimes to disconnect from the day-to-day hustle and bustle of the responsibilities in which I have in my life, and it's an outlet for me. And I thank you that I have that outlet, and I thank you that these people have that outlet. But God, don't let our passions blind us into being a false idol and overshadow the one truth, the truth that you are a loving, caring Father who loves us and wants the best for us. And God, I just pray for these people that are listening to this podcast today. I pray you keep them safe in their travels, whether they're heading to work. I pray you keep them safe in their day-to-day jobs and their families and their careers and all that they do, and especially in the timber. Keep them safe. And I pray, Lord, that they slow down and they speak to you and they talk to you, and that you reveal yourself to them like they have never seen before, and that their purpose in life of following your will as their creator, and following and loving and worshiping you in the things that they do on a day-to-day basis, that be revealed to them, and that they come away renewed by the blood of Jesus Christ in that sense. God, I just thank you for the opportunity to be chasing turkeys here in a few weeks. I'm so excited to be doing that. And I know that there's a lot of people listening to this that are in the same boat. And I pray you watch over them, and I pray that they have the best season that they could possibly imagine. It's your holy name we pray. Amen.
I saw this app.
I got a hit.
In the new limited series, DTF St. Louis, Jason Bateman, David Harbour, and Linda Cardellini star as three suburbanites who spice up their love lives.
Wow.
Don't miss the new HBO original limited series, DTF St. Louis, premiering March 1st on HBO Max.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.